You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily podcast on the Minnesota Timberwolves, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Welcome, 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 ladies and gentlemen, to another Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Colt Molesky here, as always, bringing you another episode. Remember to go check out Zone Coverage right away when you get done with this episode and check out all the great content we have up on there about the Timberwolves. I also have a gambling article if you want to make some holiday cash before you head into Christmas. That's a great way to do it, is always sports betting. That's the way to do it. So go check that out. There's all kinds of great coverage of the Timberwolves as well on there. Check out Zone Coverage for sure. And this morning, as I am every Friday morning, I'm joined by David Naylor. David, that was a fantastic game by the Timberwolves.
They went out and did what they were supposed to do for once.
Which is something we enjoy here as people who cover the Timberwolves on a day-to-day basis. We really enjoy seeing a team that has this much talent actually go out and not stoop to the level of talent that they're playing.
Just it's like they finally like played against the bad team and just opened up a can of whoop ass.
Good old fashioned can of whoop ass.
Good old fashioned can of whoop ass, and it was beautiful to see. And my goodness, all of the extended discussion about minutes. We got Butler only at 35 minutes. We got Taj Gibson at only 24. Just a beautiful sight to see.
Thank
for all
God.
all of the complaining across all of Timberwolves Twitter over the last few days. I'm glad to have seen it.
Butler might have just died at the All-Star break if that minutes clip that he was on had continued, or that all the starters were on, really.
Yeah, we had a bit of a talk about this on Wolves Wired on Wednesday, and it's interesting if you go back and look even just 10 years ago at the minute loads, like top players on any team in the NBA were playing. They were playing 39, 40, 41 minutes a game. So it's like, this isn't totally out of the question, and those guys had long extended careers, but compared to what we've learned about rest habits and about player wellness and about extending seasons, it is an outlier. But the point's been made. I know Jim Peterson, Timberwolves color broadcaster on Fox Sports North, has made the point on the broadcast and on Twitter that these guys have done these minute limits in the past, but we don't need to spend time talking about that because they finally actually did what they were supposed to do and got to play the bench for a long time.
Yeah, well, and to your point about that too, like 20 years ago, they weren't nearly as fast-paced, the games too. So that's why it's also important to get guys rest, is because you got a lot more transition that you're playing in. You're playing a lot more up-tempo. But I don't want to talk about that. I want to talk about a great performance from them. Just so everybody knows, in about 6 minutes, 7 minutes, we are going to go full hypothetical and prediction and trying to estimate and guesstimate to our best of abilities. If you don't like that kind of thing, you only have about 7 minutes left on this podcast, because we're going to talk about All-Star and predicting all kinds of craziness. So buckle up for that later on. But I wanted to get to Karl-Anthony Towns really coming out. I thought that this might be a little bit of a game where you could potentially see him slipping up against a physical Randolph and Willie Cauley-Stein. Maybe he would have a little bit of a problem. He just came out and had a phenomenal performance, put up the 30 points, 14 rebounds, had 5 blocks. This team as a whole blocked the ball 9 times, and they average about 4.5 blocks a game. So coming in blocking with 9 was pretty impressive in general, but Towns with the 5 to go along with the 30 and 14, really great showing from him.
Oh, and just all around, it wasn't just on the defensive end where he had one of his better games that he's had in a bit, but all across the board, 30 points, 14 rebounds, 5 offensive rebounds, 5 assists, 1 steal, kept himself out of foul trouble for the most part, which has been a problem for him in several of the last few games. Just did exactly what he needed to do, had a really solid game, and was well supported by the rest of the team, but it was a Towns night.
Also, too, a really great Wiggins night. He has really struggled since Butler has gone on this tear through December, and even the last game they played when he put up 20 points, he still struggled shooting. He had a very poor shooting percentage, and I think he went, 8 for 24? This game, 52% shot, knocked down 9 of his 17 shots, went 3 for 4 from deep, a lot better efficiency from just shooting, and again, with that, with the way he's been playing defense, if he can just be an efficient scorer and put 22 points on a reasonable amount of shots, that's what you want to see from him. This was definitely his best game since Butler has been tearing through December.
3 for 4 from three is a really good sign. You and I have talked about the importance of his three-point shooting on this podcast before, and for him to get back into good form on that is going to be huge for the Wolves to win games moving forward.
So what, going into just today, when the Timberwolves, the coaching staff is kind of pulled away from the actual game night, they've slept on it, they go back, they look at some stats, maybe a little film, and then they approach their team and say, do you think they say this is what our team can be? This is the well-oiled machine that this team has the potential to play at. And I know it's just against the Kings, and I don't want to blow it too far out of proportion, but this team looked really good, and if they play like this consistently, I feel like they can translate this game to play against better teams like this.
So that begs the question is, what changed for the Timberwolves last night? Well, just they were playing the Kings. I think there was an important change that we should discuss at the beginning of the second quarter.
Yeah, you dive into it. Dive into it.
Marcus George's Hunt entered the rotation for the first time this season.
And got and played well. Minutes.
And played well in his minutes. But they didn't use the 8-man rotation. They actually used more players. And yeah, they were playing well before that, but like, perhaps actually using more than 8 players in your roster is a viable strategy to winning basketball games. Who would have thought?
I wanted to talk to you about that a little bit today, just because not only did they use more players, but a lot of players got significant minutes. So you had Tyus Jones with 17, Jamal Crawford with 16, Gorgie had 24. The bench wasn't just kind of that fleeting thought that it has been over the last few weeks of, oh yeah, you had a couple guys go out there and play outside of the starters, but they only got 6 minutes each. You had a bunch of guys, and again, you mentioned Hunt, he had 16 as well. You had a bunch of guys contributing in a big way, not just that they actually got time on the floor, but they're actually out there for enough of a stretch of a game where they could be a part of what was going on the court. And I thought that was probably the biggest difference in this game.
Yeah. Gorgie getting more minutes, I think, is pretty critical for him just to continue to get up a more of a comfort level. He's been showing stronger and stronger performances over the last couple of weeks. And I know that part of the minute load between both he and Taj was first half foul trouble for Taj. But Gorgie, again, had a decent night. Didn't score that much, but was tied for the team high in plus-minus with a +22 while he was on the floor, grabbed 8 rebounds. Had 4 steals, which Gorgie keeps randomly getting a whole bunch of steals at some point, so he's had a real eye for that this year. So it's good for him to continue to get those extended minutes. And yeah, like, George's Hunt actually getting a little bit of run and showing that he can compete, even with a bad NBA team. Like, he went out, he competed, he did the necessary, and the thing you always look for with guys like that is they didn't make the team actively worse. Whereas you look at guys like Shabazz Muhammad, who, again, didn't play, Shabazz has a habit of actively making the team worse on one or both ends of the floor when he's on the floor, whereas George's Hunt just did his job, which is exactly what you want to see from a dude like him, who's just kind of finding his feet and working his way into the league. Just do what needs to be done. Just come out there. Don't be a problem. Don't be a distraction. Don't, like, monopolize the ball.
Don't grab the bed. Don't grab the bed.
Yeah, it worked. It worked perfectly. That's like, Tyus Jones is the king of that game, right? Like, Tyus just goes out there and does his job every night. And he does a very admirable job, but he doesn't make mistakes.
Yeah.
That's exactly what you want to see from George's Hunt. The same exact kind of thing.
And I thought, I mean, he didn't get a lot of looks. He only took 3 shots, but he knocked down 2 of them. I thought if he's one of those guys where maybe it's not this year, but next year he could be one of those players who maybe, and I know we haven't seen a ton of time there, but there's a little bit of a flash there where maybe if he gets like 18 minutes a game, he could be a guy who's really good off the bench going forward. Maybe not this season, but next season.
But it's one of those things where if he's going to become that guy, he has to get playing time.
Exactly.
He has to get playing time on an NBA level. And that's like, we can talk about the impact of the G League all we want and how Anthony Brown and Melo Trimble and now Justin Patton are developing down there. But nothing compares to real, actual NBA minutes. And Lord knows we've watched enough rookies struggle and enough young players struggle over the last few years with getting NBA minutes for the first time and adjusting to the speed of the game. We were there in 2015-16. We were there in 2016-17. But it's part of the development process. And so if Georges Hunt can get in and get maybe not like 17, 18 minutes a game to start with, but if he can get like 12, 13, 14 minutes a night, just get out there, start of the second quarter, start of the fourth quarter, get some time in, get a couple looks every now and then, play some NBA defense, get a feel for what's going on. That's going to be so critical to his development as a player and as a contributing member of the team.
Yeah, and like you're saying, it's kind of like in football when you say like you're not really in the league until you take that first good hit. You don't really know what it's like to play in the NBA until you're having to take shots in front of that huge crowd on that stage. And so it really is just so vital for him to get minutes. Any other big takeaways from this game other than the fact that they just took care of business?
I mean, I would want to know what the stat for their record for this year is when Butler, Towns, and Wiggins all score above 20. It doesn't feel like they've done that very much, but it feels like those should be winning games when all three of them are having successful good games, or like when all three of them shoot above 50% from the field, which they did. Those seem like they should be really important, strong winning games for the Timberwolves. And so for all three of them to have relevant offensive nights, Butler pushing a triple-double, 21-7-9, Towns with the numbers we mentioned, Wiggins with 22 and not much else. Like, you expect to win those games when you have all three of your biggest, highest caliber players scoring 20-plus points a game. That's if they score 20-plus, you should win the game, and they certainly proved that last night.
I should have found this before the show, but I would also like to see their record when they have four or more guys off the bench with double-digit minutes.
That would be an interesting stat because it hasn't happened. Well, it happened a good bit early in the season, and so that would be interesting.
With four guys?
Later. With four guys? Yeah, well, Bielitsa was getting big minutes, remember? Like,
that's true.
They were running nine pretty consistently when Bielitsa was healthy and playing well, which he was at the start of the year. But
either way, I feel like both those stats produce pretty good records.
Yeah. And much even more so the two in the same game.
Yeah, yeah. We're going to get to some we're going to call them all-star fantasies, hopes, and dreams after this break. First, I just want to say that last time we talked about the All-Star game on this show, I got some heat for it, and I want to start this discussion by saying I know the West is packed. The West is packed with talent, and it's going to be very hard for a new guy in the Western Conference to make the All-Star team outside of the standard. You got the Warriors, and you've got Kawhi Leonard, who's always pushing for it. Outside of the standard kind of guys, it's hard to make a push for the All-Star game in the West. That said, Butler has the chance to maybe go on a historic tear through December. I was looking at the numbers. The best, just throughout the season, the best scorer is Kevin Love in 13-14. He averaged 26.1 points per game. He leads the Timberwolves in a franchise record for points throughout a season. So I was looking at his and then a bunch of other players, Kevin Garnett, Carl Anthony Towns, Andrew Wiggins, Tony Campbell. I was looking at all those guys who made the top 10 list in scoring average throughout the season, what their best months were. And the best one that I was able to come up with was 34 points for Kevin Love in February of 2014. He averaged 34 points a game through February. And if Butler keeps hitting 30 points, he's going to come close. He's going to come around that 28-29 point range, which would put him, because Wiggins, Towns, Garnett, they all got within 27-28 was their best month when they were doing really well scoring. So he could be one of the best Timberwolves through a single month in their history. And this seems like this is going to be the new normal for the Timberwolves and for Butler in his role on the team. If he keeps this clip up through December and into January, does he make the All-Star team in your mind?
So the thing that I want to know, because I think that it matters a lot, if I remember correctly, the All-Star starters are determined by by fan vote, and I don't think there's a required center spot in there anymore.
Yeah, it's 50% fan, 25% media, and 25% player votes.
Because always the thing for players like Butler, especially in the West, is what position do you play, and how does that classification help or hurt you? Because obviously, like, I think Butler, when he made the All-Star game last season in the East, was classified in the forward spot, which obviously in the West means you don't have to deal with Curry, Westbrook, Harden down the list. Those are the three big ones, but obviously there are several other guards in the West who are having pretty decent years. But for him to be at the wing, the names that pop out to start with are last year's starters, which were Durant and Kawhi. Now, I think that there's a pretty good argument that you could make that Kawhi shouldn't start this year's All-Star game. He just came back from injury, I think, this week.
Yep.
And so he's not going to have that much of a resume at all built up this year. So I suspect that he's not going to get the chance to start the All-Star game this year, which means there's an opening in the starting lineups. So then the question comes, who are his direct competitors for that second spot, right? Because you assume Durant's going to get it. There's almost no way he's not going to. And you assume that, maybe you have your Draymond Greens, you have your, pick any number of players in the West who are in that big selection. The Warriors, obviously, are coming to the front of my mind because they've been so good for the last 3 years. But I don't know. Who do you think is Butler's biggest competition for the starting spot? Let's say in the starting five spot in the West.
Well, before we get to that, too, just as far as they don't you don't have to vote for a center. How do you think they swing more forward? Do you think the voting swings more for a forward in replacing the center, or do you think it could be a third guard in that spot as a starter? Because that could change it too. It could impact it in a big way as well, just as far as how everything kind of falls out and how many guards make that first starting lineup. That could give him an opening to slide in that second spot, in the second team.
Well, basically, the argument you're conducting there is Russell Westbrook having a bad enough year to not be a starting All-Star, which... because that's the thing, is if it goes three guards, it's probably Curry, Westbrook, Harden. Harden will get in, no questions at all. And the other two,
I think
there's a very strong chance that they would both get in if the West can take three guards. Just because of, with Steph, it's I haven't looked at Steph's numbers for this year, but the dude's sheer popularity with the fan vote, including both in America and overseas, it's going to be pretty hard to keep him out.
Well, and too, I suppose you can't really say that there's not going to be a center this year because Cousins is playing so well.
Yeah, I think Cousins should get his. It would be pretty outrageous. So, if we break it down as we have there, it's pretty impossible to argue for Butler over any of Curry, Westbrook, Harden, Durant, Cousins, as the year has gone so far. I think that's a pretty fair statement.
The upside is that the way OKC has played, I don't think you have to worry as much. I'm not sure if Paul George makes it. I'm not sure, or if he's going to steal a spot from a guy like Butler. Carmelo Anthony definitely is not going to make the All-Star team. So it looked like almost like the Thunder had the potential to send two or three guys, and now they'll probably just send Russell Westbrook, which you could look at as a plus.
Carmelo doesn't get the New York media boost anymore, so I doubt he's going to go anywhere, especially because he really hasn't been that good this year. Because that was so much of it is he was the Knicks guy, so he was going to get all that huge New York fan vote as the guy this year, which the East will probably see Kristaps start. I don't think that's unfair to say, even if that's not the right choice. The fan vote from Knicks fans could be just huge in that.
What happens if Westbrook doesn't make the All? I know this isn't what we were talking about, and I'll get us back to Butler in a second here, but what happens if Westbrook doesn't make the All-Star team? Does he just start, like, punching basketball players in games?
He'll probably end up going on another tear. Like, same thing that happens every time. Like, he doesn't get the MVP or doesn't get whatever, like, and then he'll come make petty comments in the media about how it doesn't really matter to him, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, you have Kawhi with the injury, Blake Griffin with his injury, probably that, or not probably, it definitely puts him out of the All-Star game. I think that there is a packed crowd, but there's also been some factors that go into it where some of the guys you would just assume at the beginning of the season make the All-Star team, I think they're not in it now, and so that definitely helps Jimmy Butler's case. I'm just saying, it was a long stretch to even think about beforehand, but now if he continues to have the December that he's putting up and have one of the top five best months that Timberwolves had in franchise history, I think there's a real shot that he could make the All-Star game.
The one thing, he's having a great month. He's almost certainly been the Timberwolves' best player, and he can continue to get even better because we've seen better games from him before, both this year and before and in his time in Chicago. The asterisk you always have to bring is the Timberwolves franchise history is not exactly illustrious in a lot of areas. If you go look at the Timberwolves records, so like
I was trying to avoid that.
You have to bring it up with the Timberwolves. Like it's unavoidable. They've been bad for a long time. They've had like two really good seasons in their franchise history. So having the best month in Timberwolves franchise history is great. Having the best month in like Celtics franchise history might mean a little bit more.
No, you're absolutely right. And that's true. At the same time, there's a way to pair that stat and say, yeah, I realize that their history isn't great, so this may be, you can try and make this look more impressive than it actually is. At the same time, this is the kind of thing that Jimmy Butler is doing, is he's rejuvenating a really broken organization that has been broken for some time. And now he's a breath of fresh air. He's that sign of life that this team is going to have a pulse and actually have a say in what happens in the Western Conference and maybe a playoff spot and maybe be able to do stuff when they get into the playoffs. So you could look at it that way too, as him kind of being the savior as well, and hold that month up as a good reason for why, because of that.
Well, and that's exactly right. With voting starting, I think, within a week or two from now, if not this week, the Timberwolves are fourth in the Western Conference. And for once, their record's not going to be a detriment when talking about potentially sending players like, say, Kevin Love to the All-Star game, because they're not a bottom-feeding team anymore. They're currently sitting the best team outside of the clear top three in the West. And so that could actually be a useful factor to Butler when you're looking at Butler against somebody like Paul George, who's been good, but his team hasn't been winning games. And when they haven't, it hasn't been good. The Timberwolves have been winning games, even though they haven't been very good, and Jimmy Butler has been the huge catalyst to many of their wins. So I think that that's an important factor for both Butler and, I think, almost more interestingly, Karl-Anthony Towns. Because I think Towns has an outside shot of making the All-Star game this year.
That would be tougher for me. I am fine with him making the All-Star game, but as far as just me arguing with other people about it, that would be a tougher argument for me to make than Butler. Not only because of his very reputable defensive play, but also because there's not a ton of room for big guys, even though people said the big man's position was dead, and that's not true. It's just it evolved, but there's still not as many spots and slots for those kind of guys. And outside of, you have Anthony Davis and Boogie, and now you're really starting to narrow down and choke down on how many of those guys outside of those two you're looking at.
Okay, I have a counterpoint. Davis is hurt again. So I don't think his All-Star candidacy is at all for sure. And the reminder when looking at Towns is that DeAndre Jordan started the All-Star game 2 years ago with numbers, because DeAndre Jordan was putting up ridiculous numbers. The thing with Karl Anthony Towns that is unavoidable is that he puts up 20 and 10 every single night. He's one of the only guys in the NBA every night, 20 and 10, 20 and 10, 20 and 10, 20 and 10. I'm pretty sure he's either tied or still leading the NBA in double-doubles. He puts up numbers every night. And when we're talking about something that involves a fan vote, numbers matter. Like, it is so hard to argue in terms of talking to a casual fan, maybe not somebody who's here listening to this Locked On Wolves podcast, maybe not somebody who's reading it, but for the casual fan who's clicking through looking at all-star players, you pull up Karl Anthony Towns' stat page, says he's averaging 20-some points, 10-some rebounds a game for over 30 games of a season. That's pretty good.
No, yeah, absolutely.
That's the thing is, like, we can argue against it all we want as, like, snobby basketball-watching writer blah blahs, but Towns is putting up 20-12 a night in the NBA in his third season, and he's still really, really good.
No, yeah.
So I think that Towns' candidacy is more interesting than people give it credit for. With Gasol hurt, with Davis hurt, with Griffin hurt, with DeAndre Jordan having a rough year, it's Cousins and then who else in the West as the second big guy. I think that you can make an interesting argument for Towns. I think that you can make a similarly interesting argument for Steven Adams and Clint Capella.
Clint Capella was the guy who I was just about to mention, was the other guy who might have the chance to, just because of how high-profile the Rockets are.
And that's exactly right. And Steven Adams, I feel like I remember looking up, he hasn't just been abusing the Timberwolves. He's having a career year on offense. And so it's like, I think that you're not looking at the usual suspects in terms of the big guys in the West at the top of the race this year. Because for so many years, it's been Griffin, Davis, Cousins, Jordan, Gasol. That's the discussion. There's no room past that. But now this year, with the fall of the Clippers, the fall of the Grizzlies, and Davis continuing to get hurt every 5 minutes for his entire career, I think that Towns is in the conversation.
Yeah, and
which is great.
Like, it is awesome. Great. And it'd be amazing if they got two players into the All-Star game. That would be phenomenal. I'm not saying Towns doesn't have the numbers or doesn't have a route to the All-Star game, but his route, I think, is definitely more difficult than Butler's especially because of the story. I feel like storylines play a bigger role than people are willing to admit with the All-Star voting. And the storyline of Butler coming to save the city of Minneapolis is one that definitely feels like it's a storyline that pushes him into the All-Star game with the numbers that he's putting up in December.
Yep, I think that's a very fair point. And I'm going to be interested to see if the team pushes one or the other of them more in terms of social media presence, in terms of promotion. Because obviously, like, teams and their social media in this day and age play a large part in sporting who. And obviously every team is going to have, like, their guy or two. The Wolves could have social media promos after their entire starting lineup, and somewhat legitimately. But I think it'll be interesting to see if the team themselves do any work to try and promote, whether it's just Butler, whether it's Butler and Towns, whether it's Butler and Towns and Gibson. Like, I think that'll be interesting to see, just in terms of, like, who are they gonna get behind, and who. What's that going to look like from a local perspective?
No, yeah, it'll be fascinating. Heading out here, do we need to talk about the Phoenix Suns game, or is that just gonna? Are we just gonna jinx the Timberwolves again on this one?
It's a bad idea. We shouldn't do it.
All right.
We saw what happened the last time we analyzed the Phoenix Suns. Let's just avoid that.
All right.
I will say, to close the All-Star discussion, I believe, having talked to friend of the program, Tim Fakeless, earlier today, that we may have some written content coming out on Jimmy Butler's case for the All-Star game on zonecoverage.com within the next couple of days. So keep your eyes out for that. We're going to continue this discussion, and obviously it's going to go forward over the next few weeks and months while the voting goes forward. So just keep your eyes out for that, because I'm interested to see what Tim's thoughts on this are now that you've heard both mine and Colton's.
Absolutely. Definitely go check that out. The Minnesota, we'll just say Minnesota's next game is on Monday against Portland. That's what we'll go with. They play Portland.
I think next week is going to be very interesting because they finally get their hands on two of their closest competitors in the West in Portland and Denver for the first time this season. And so I think those matches are going to be really fun to watch.
The Portland game is really good, too, just because of the backcourt. But Denver, especially, just with the front court that they play with, will be interesting to see up against Towns and Gibson.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
I don't know what Jokic's health situation is, but I hope he's back.
I really do as well, just because that would be such a great battle. Towns and the way he's playing, especially as of late against Jokic, would be a great battle and just a solid benchmark for how Towns is doing against really good young talent.
Yep. I was at the one of the Nuggets Wolves games in Denver just after Christmas last year, which Jokic, I believe, got one of his first career triple doubles in and was just incredible. So I hope he's healthy. I haven't checked. I haven't done my research on that yet. That's next week. But Jokic is a phenomenal player, and you should watch him. And him battling with Towns is a matchup you would not want to miss if it's possible.
Absolutely not. You got to watch that game if he's in there. Alrighty, that's it for us, and that's it for the All-Star conversation. Thanks for indulging David and I as we dive into something that's very near and dear to both of our hearts, especially with the how many All-Stars the Timberwolves have pumped into the All-Star game the last 10 years. Definitely good. Hopefully there will be a couple more this season.
Wouldn't it be nice to get one of them in not named Kevin?
Gosh, you have no idea. People have no idea outside
of
Minneapolis.
Wouldn't that be cool?
That would be awesome. That would be so nice. It would be so nice to get two players. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, what possibilities?
What a time to be alive.
You said it. That's David. I'm Colton, and this has been another Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.